Well, good afternoon and good morning to those on the West Coast, and happy St. Patrick's Day. Welcome to our webcast on Excelling on CAHPS, Lessons from Top-Performing Medicaid and CHIP Health Plans. My name is Dale Schaller, and I'll be the moderator for today's webcast. Our event today is one in a series of webcasts on CAHPS, which stands for Consumer Assessment of Healthcare Providers and Systems, and it's produced by the CAHPS User Network. Many of you I know are familiar with the CAHPS surveys and program, but just a few words of background. Primarily funded by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, or AHRQ, the CAHPS program develops standardized surveys for assessing patients' experiences with their care, produces a number of products and services to support their use, such as the National CAHPS database. CAHPS surveys have been developed to assess patient experience in both ambulatory and facility-based healthcare settings. The CAHPS family of surveys has expanded rapidly over the past two decades. As shown here, facility surveys include HCAHPS or hospital CAHPS for hospitals, as well as CAHPS for dialysis centers and nursing homes. The CAHPS suite of ambulatory care surveys has expanded to include not just the original health plan survey, circled here in red because it is the focus of our webinar today, but we also have CAHPS surveys for medical groups and individual clinicians, known as the CAHPS Clinician and Group Survey, or CGCAHPS, and other surveys that are designed for surgical care, behavioral health, home health, and special populations. The focus of our webcast today is on the use of the CAHPS Health Plan Survey, and it's intended to highlight success stories from two health plans, one serving the adult Medicaid population and one serving enrollees in the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, all with the aim of trying to answer this question. What does it take to achieve scores above the 80th percentile on all of the CAHPS Health Plan Survey core composites and rating measures? And given the large number of respondents to our webcast today, we have over 500 registrations. We know this is an important topic of interest to a large number of health plans and other stakeholder groups around the country. To help explore our topic today, we're pleased to feature speakers from two public health plan programs in different parts of the country. Stacia Cohen is Vice President of the Medicare STARS Center of Excellence and former Director of Medicare and Medicaid Program Management at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota, based in Eagan, Minnesota. And Chris Sellers is Director of Data and Evaluation for the All Kids Children's Health Insurance Program with the Alabama Department of Public Health in Montgomery, Alabama. And again, my name is Dale Schaller. I'm a member of the National CAHPS Consortium, Managing Director of the CAHPS database, and I'll be moderating today's discussion about how these two health plans were able to achieve and sustain their exceptional results on their respective CAHPS health plan surveys, and also what lessons their experience can offer other health plans, particularly those serving Medicaid and CHIP enrollees. Just a few quick housekeeping details. If you need help at any time during the webcast, you can use the Q&A icon. And you can also join us by phone at any time by dialing the number on your screen, 855-442-5743, and entering the conference ID number listed. If you have another problem that you sometimes have is if your computer freezes during the presentations, and if that does happen, you can simply hit your F5 button on your keyboard to refresh your screen. But what you might be just experiencing is, in terms of lag time and slide advancing, is related to your internet connection speed. So you can also try logging out and logging back into the webcast. Given the large number of participants on today's event, we're going to be taking questions submitted online only. And to ask a question, you simply click the Q&A icon to get that box to appear, and then you just type in your question and the text box, and you select submit, and then we will be reviewing your questions and fielding them during the Q&A sessions. There are two of them in today's webcast. But I'd encourage you to send in your questions as soon as you can so that we can make sure to tee up as many as possible. Today's slides are also available for downloading by clicking on the icon at the bottom of your screen that says Download Slides, and that's going to generate a PDF version of the presentation that you can download and save. And we also have some additional resources available that you can access under the Resources icon, and here you'll find links to the CAPS Improvement Guide and other resources for improvement. We have several case studies and links to the CAPS site as well as the CAPS database site, and also links to both the Blue Plus of Minnesota and the All Kids program sites. Now, I know many of you are familiar with the CAPS Health Plan Survey and what it measures, but just quickly for those who aren't, the survey consists of a set of core questions that address four domains of care that we know are important to health plan enrollees. Two of them have to do with access issues, getting needed care, and getting care quickly. One has to do with communication with doctors, and another has to do with getting information and customer service from the health plan itself. There are four questions that ask survey respondents to rate their personal doctor, a specialist if they've seen one in the past 12 months, their overall health care, and the health plan overall itself. And all of these rating questions are on a scale of 0 to 10. In addition to the core measures, there are a large number of supplemental questions that can be added to the core to meet specific needs, such as chronic conditions questions, behavioral health, interpreter services, questions related to mobility-impaired populations, and other topics. And so we also have adult and child versions of the health plan survey provided in both English and Spanish. Now, the CAPS scores that were used to compare against the scores of the two health plans that are part of our webcast came from the National CAPS database, which is a free service supported by AHRQ. It's open to all Medicaid and CHIP users of the health plan survey, as well as a component devoted to the CG CAPS survey. Both Blue Plus of Minnesota and the All Kids program voluntarily submitted or authorized that their data be submitted on their behalf to the CAPS database, and then was combined with hundreds of other health plan data to contribute to this national database and thereby enable their results to be compared to a large number of health plans as reference points. And that's also how we were able to identify these two plans as high performers. And so the CAPS database provides comparative results through several platforms that include an online reporting system. We do annual chart books that summarize key findings, and we make available research data files that are available on request. And I'll say a bit more about the CAPS database and what's available and how to participate at the end of our webcast. So, without any further delay, I'm pleased to turn things over to our first speaker, Stacia Cohen, who, like Chris, will address these topics in presenting their success story, a bit about their organization, a snapshot of their CAPS scores, how CAPS is used, factors contributing to their performance, and then thoughts about their barriers or sustainability and lessons for other Medicaid and CHIP plans. So, Stacia, take it away.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to everyone today. I'm just making sure the slide advances. Everybody can see that, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit about Blue Plus's performance. First of all, I want to clarify that Blue Plus is the HMO arm of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota. It is a requirement in the state of Minnesota to participate in managed Medicaid that you either be an HMO or you be one of a group of counties that have come together pursuant to a joint powers agreement to contract for Medicaid and bear full risk. So all of the health plans in Minnesota are actually HMOs. The history of the Blue Plus Medicaid plan, medical assistance in Minnesota is actually quite old now. people have been participating in managed care. This is the 30th year. And there has been mandatory enrollment for Medicaid-eligible recipients for over 20 years in Minnesota. There is also a program for the, it's typically thought of as the program for the working poor, which is publicly subsidized, called Minnesota Care. In 2016, our Minnesota Care program is converting to the basic health plan, but will stay in the suite of products offered through the state contracts. It will not be offered as a QHP on the exchange. So I think that's a little bit different than many states in the country, and thought that was an important thing for people to understand. The reason that Minnesota went to managed care all those years ago was to improve access to services for Medicaid recipients. And as you will see as we move to the top box scores, that has really over time played out to be a very effective mechanism. You'll note that the scores, that five of these eight scores have a statistically relevant improvement over the national percentile in terms of getting access to needed care, getting it quickly, their doctor communications, doctor ratings, and overall health care ratings. Statistically, we perform better than the rest of the country, and I think that's the long and rich history of managed care here. When we think about how we use CAHPS data internally here at Blue Cross, there's a couple of really relevant points. First of all, Blue Cross does accredit our Medicaid program specifically through NCQA. So we have a very formal system in place to conduct quality improvement, oversight, and monitoring activities. And because the member experience of care is part of that quality system, we actually have a fairly robust process in place. So we use data in a number of ways, and we actually monitor data across a number of points, including not only our CAHPS surveys, but complaints, grievances, appeals, our customer service timeliness and friendliness, claims monitoring, and then member satisfaction with our utilization management activities. Many of those we do as part of our NCQA accreditation, so it keeps at a minimum a quarterly review of data points and opportunities for us to right the ship, if you will, when we see data that are not where we would like them to be. In addition, so that we don't have any surprises with an annual CAHPS survey, we do ongoing surveys of member satisfaction, particularly with our customer service area. And we do surveys through the Blue Cross Association of things like first call resolution and how quickly we were able to and accurately were able to resolve their questions. This next slide is really to take that information about sort of the formal process and give you a picture of how we embed that into our overall quality improvement program oversight. So as you will see, one of the three key pillars of work that we do is our member experience work group, and that really supports our overall enterprise level consumer experience strategic pillar. So we have really formal reporting in there. That member experience work group meets regularly. It does report up to the Quality Council. As you will note, our Quality Council is a VP level committee, and it is intended to both drive execution and create shared accountability for outcomes across the enterprise. Outcomes related to our Medicaid business are not just owned in government programs. They are really reflective of the work of the enterprise. When we think about what are those elements that really impact our CAHPS scores, we have a couple that we frankly benefit from but really don't influence. In particular, the Medicaid benefit benefit package in Minnesota has an actuarial value of somewhere around 98%. It is a very generous benefit package. So we don't have a lot of people dissatisfied with their benefits. In addition, there are no carve-outs in Minnesota, and we think that that has been important. The health plans have worked with the state for a long time to preserve that, so that sometimes the sources of dissatisfaction that plans are experiencing are when you have, you know, one benefit manager doing mental health or substance abuse, you have another one doing medical care, you may have a whole nother carve out for dental services and or transportation, and that has, you know, we frequently hear that as a source of angst in some other parts of the state. We don't really influence that other than continuing to stress the importance of that both with the state and with our legislators. The other factor we also don't have a lot of control over is the consolidation of the care systems. Minnesota is a highly consolidated market. There are about 8 care systems in the state that cover the vast majority of medical services rendered here. However, there's a number of things that we do feel directly we do that influence positively our CAHP scores. So some of those that I think are worth highlighting are that we do not use a gatekeeper model. Here, most of the health plans in Minnesota do not. I think some of that has to do with how long we've had managed care here in Minnesota. Some of that is, frankly, as soon as one plan does a gatekeeper model or doesn't do a gatekeeper model, all the other plans end up needing to follow suit, or they're at a competitive disadvantage. The other things we do specifically here at Blue Cross are our Medicaid and government programs customer service is done in a dedicated unit. It is purpose-built, and it is really focused exclusively on our government programs business. Consequently, we don't have a lot of confusion about how to respond to benefit questions and inquiries. We are able to train our staff to push information to people at a much lower reading level, and generally speaking, have had extremely high scores in our customer service area. In addition, all of the non-emergency transportation is also coordinated in the same unit with our customer service so that we don't have to pass beneficiaries around to a number of different locations to service their needs. As I think about some of the other environmental impacts on CAHPS, another thing that I thought was important to share with you, because this is something that all of the plans and providers came together a number of years ago in Minnesota and did, and we support them, we fund them both in the startup and in ongoing funding. We have 2 quality improvement organizations in Minnesota. One is called Minnesota Community Measurement. The other is the Institute for Clinical Systems Improvement. And that has really baked the concept of quality improvement and measurement into the way healthcare is both delivered and paid for in Minnesota. And those 2 organizations publish a number of statewide results that the plans and provider groups use to inform program changes. So, for example, just hot off the press is a new health equity report about what are the disparate outcomes by some of our ethnic and cultural groups on specific health outcomes in Minnesota. When we look at how do we overcome barriers, I'm sure that many of you noted on the map that Blue Plus's footprint in Minnesota is predominantly rural. We are the largest rural health plan in Minnesota, and as a result, we frequently have distance barriers. We have populations that are very geographically dispersed. Being the land of 10,000 lakes, in some of our counties, we have great big bodies of water, and people have to travel all the way around the body of water to get to health care. So that does create some interesting challenges. We've had to get quite creative about how do we meet people's health care needs in terms of using things like telemedicine, online care. There's a robust program in Minnesota for paying for physician extenders. In the population here in Minnesota, the Medicaid population, over 80% of our counties are considered rural. And so for Blue Plus, that has a pretty significant impact. I think the other thing I would highlight is that county provider and advocacy groups have a strong influence on member satisfaction. both from a positive perspective when they are happy with health plan performance. I think they speak very positively about health plans, and I think that drives improvement in CAHPS scores. When they are unhappy, I would say that the exact opposite happens. And so that's a constituency we pay really close attention to because we believe it has a direct impact on our scores. So we staff intentionally to provide good service and relationship management with county and provider staff. Additionally, like most states, all healthcare is local, all politics is local, and we've had to come up with very region-specific member options. Finally, one of the other things that we do here in Minnesota, and virtually all the health plans do, because if you don't, it's a dissatisfier, is member incentives for things like seeking appropriate preventive care. To sustain the gains, as I mentioned, we here have a very clearly baked atmosphere of continuous improvement that's part of the culture here at Blue Cross, but it's very deliberate, and it needs some care and feeding. That does not happen by accident. It's something that we have to be really purposeful about. We also have both a member and a senior advisory council who inform program changes. And those are comprised of a lot of stakeholders that serve the Medicaid population. That's one of the ways we give voice to the advocacy groups because we recognize that they have a pretty powerful voice. Finally, some key takeaways. If for any new plans entering this space, one of the really most important takeaways is that you cannot build your Medicaid delivery system on your commercial chassis. That is just a recipe for disaster. The population needs very different things. They need very different case management. They need very different customer service. Most, case management models are built off catastrophic care. That's not this population. Not that there aren't ever any cases in there. There certainly is, but that might be, 1 or 2% of the population. But the needs for case management and care navigation are much broader than that. Finally, I would also say your network design needs fine-tuning. That's one of the things we've learned, frankly, in some ways the hard way, is that as health plans, we tend to focus on hospitals and physician providers because that's where a lot of the care and a lot of the spend is. In the Medicaid space, public health and behavioral health providers are a critical part of the network and need some very purposeful build to ensure that you're meeting the needs of the beneficiaries. And I think that comes to the end of my time here. So I thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I will open it up for questions.
Great, Stacia. Thank you so much. That was a very, very helpful overview of your program at Blue Plus in the context of the Minnesota market. We do have several questions. I'm going to start with one that asks about the generous benefits that you provide without carve-outs. The question is this cost effective? In other words, do you have any helpful facts about generous benefits leading to better medical care that offset the cost of generous benefits?
Well, I would say that the benefit set is dictated by the state here in Minnesota, so frankly what the plans think about it is a little bit irrelevant.
Okay.
However, we certainly have seen some improved health outcomes across a number of domains. When we look at the performance, for example, on HEDIS, we fairly consistently perform above the 90th percentile in a lot of measures that you don't see as typically in Medicaid programs. And so I think that that has to do in part with the benefit set, that non-emergency transportation is a covered Medicaid benefit. So you don't have people who don't seek appropriate preventive services because they can't get there. We don't have, cost prohibitive copayments on a number of services. I would say that one of the areas that we have the most stark opportunity would be that there really is essentially no cost sharing on emergency services, and so there continues to be an inordinately high amount of emergency room utilization. That, however, is one of the quality metrics the state bakes into the managed care contract. There are there is something they call a withhold, and they hold 5% of our premium back and set some withhold targets across cost and quality, and if we achieve those, we get that additional premium.
Okay, great. So there are a number of other questions. Let me get to them. We have about six of them. So what first one up is, what kind of incentives does Minnesota offer for member use of preventive services? Could you give a few examples?
Sure. We have a member rewards program. They're gift certificates or gift cards in the amount of ranging from $25 to $75, dependent on the frequency of service that's required. So, for example, two-year-olds who are fully immunized and have had all six visits prior to 15 months, that we do a $75 gift card for that. We also do them for women who have appropriate prenatal care in the first trimester and appropriate postpartum care during the days, you know, during the heatest window postpartum.
Okay. So there's a couple of questions here that are relate to how you relate to your provider and network. One is asking about any specific incentives that you give to your providers, your provider network, based on CAHPS results. And then I have another one for you.
Sure. We do a couple of different things with our provider network. We have something called the aligned incentive program that attaches pay for quality across a number of measurements. They actually don't use HEDIS. They use Minnesota Community Measurement Standards, which are slightly different. We also, on the Medicaid side, have our revenue and expense model. So we have moved into total cost of care arrangements, and we use quality metrics as the gateway. So the more of our quality targets that they hit, the more the higher percentage of their gain sharing they're eligible for.
Are there ways, Stacia, this other question relates to ways that you engage those providers directly in the CAHPS scores? So do you collect any provider-specific CAHPS, and how do you relate back your CAHPS health plan scores to their performance?
Sure. So CG CAHPS is part of our aligned incentive agreement, and so we use the so in our pay-for-quality program, CG CAHPS is used as one of the quality metrics.
Mm-hmm. Would you – this has another question related to the provider network – and the question is to describe what you mean by a robust primary care network that's different than what you would use for commercial and Medicare. Is that what you mean? You actually have do you have a separate network for that?
No.
Okay.
No, I was saying that the network you need to pay attention to outside of primary care is public health and behavioral health providers, because hospital and clinic utilization isn't sort of it's not the key priority at the state level. It's also not the key place that beneficiaries access. They use a lot of public health services, and they use a lot of behavioral health services. And so when you're thinking about how you deal with your provider network, if you don't have good access to those two kinds of programs, that will drive increased complaints and decrease member satisfaction.
Okay, one other question. We have just a couple more minutes before we'll turn to Chris. Can you describe what you mean by public health providers? Again, a kind of a provider network question.
Sure. That is services rendered by the public health department. So here in Minnesota, many of our counties, if not most of them, have a robust public health home visiting program, for example. So services actually rendered by the public health department.
There are a number of questions that I think we'll try to get back to during the next Q&A session, but let me just pose one more, because I think it's a tough one that I think many plans can relate to serving this population. The question comes from Nevada, where there's something like 69% of invalid phone numbers and poor tracking of valid addresses among their members. How do you connect with a population that is that difficult to reach? Or do you have that problem?
We share that pain. No, we share that pain. I would say that we get about 40% of our mail gets returned for bad addresses, and we have bad phone numbers on roughly the same percentage. We are starting to get more and more email addresses, and people are starting to be more comfortable providing their cell phone numbers because they would rather get pushed text messages than get phone calls. One of the things we learned, and we didn't really know, is that even things like our medical management programs, most Medicaid beneficiaries, at least in Minnesota, do have cell phone coverage. However, they do not want us burning up their minutes. They're happy to receive information, and they're happy to exchange text messaging, but they do not want us using their phone minutes. So we are also, that's a pain shared by everybody. I think everybody's trying to figure out how to have a multi-channel approach.
Very good. Stacia, thanks again so much for that very helpful presentation. And to those of you sending in questions, thank you for those, and we'll get to as many unanswered questions as possible. But first, we will turn now to Chris Sellers. Chris, take it away on All Kids.
Thank you, Dale. It's good to be here today and to share our history as a CHIP assessing consumer experience. My name is Chris Sellers. I'm director of Data and Valuation for All Kids, which is Alabama's Children's Health Insurance Program. Just to give you a little background on who we are, Alabama has the distinction of having the first approved CHIP plan in the nation. We are administered by the Alabama Department of Public Health. That is a separate agency from the state Medicaid agency. As such, we are a standalone program. We are a separate CHIP. We deliver our health care through a private fee-for-service delivery model. While we are separate from Medicaid, we have extensive collaboration with Medicaid, of course. We've always have had a joint paper application with Medicaid. When we began our online application, it too was a joint application with Medicaid. We are currently in the process of merging our eligibility and enrollment systems. This was partly in effort to be more compliant with the Affordable Care Act provisions. We also collaborate extensively with Medicaid when it comes to grant projects. We've been had projects we work with Medicaid on funded by Southern Institute. As most recently, we were a recipient of the Max Enrollment grant funded by Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Our experience with CAHPS began in 2011 as a result of the CHIP Reauthorization Act. When we began to use CAHPS formally, we started with the core set and we added the supplements for chronic conditions as well as dental, access to specialist care, and the care coordination. In our earlier years, we actually added a supplement of a customized supplement for outreach assessment. We had a lot of outreach with our families through different media channels, and we were trying to assess which channel was most effective in reaching our families. As far as how we deliver our survey out, we have an approach of using a mixed mail telephone mode, meaning we do the mail first, and if we need to, then we kick in the telephone mode. Our response rate has been unusually high. This past year, it was at 38%. In years prior, it's been in as high as 43%. And in every year so far that we've done CAHPS, we've had enough response through mail only in the short term to not have to go into the second phase of doing the telephone mode. And our vendor has told us that several times that that's a sign that the fact that they are so willing to respond is usually a good sign that they are satisfied with the program. Mm-hmm. On this next slide, I want to show you some of our data. We're looking here at the core composites and some of the healthcare ratings from CAHPS, comparing in 2013 our results against the 2013 national benchmark of 80%. And in 2014, looking at our results compared against the national benchmark of 90%. And as you can see, for most measures, we just barely meet or we exceed the benchmark that year. Most importantly, I like to look at the lowest, at the bottom row, health plan rating. We consistently every year score much higher than the benchmark. So that's a source of pride for us, of course, and we're glad that our families find us in a favorable light. But we do dig beneath the surface on this. We don't just look at the overall average of the composites. Those composites are built off of smaller items. We look at those as well. And, for instance, on doctor communication, for a few years we found that even though the average was above benchmark, there were some pieces to that that were performing what we thought was rather low. So as a response, we went back to the CAPS library, pulled out the communication subset, and thought, we'll add this supplement in the following year just to kind of get a deeper look and to see what's going on. So this is a good panel to start with. It tells you kind of where you are in a dashboard sense, but it also gives you an opportunity to dig a little deeper. And you can even come up with custom questions as you need to, if that's what helps you in your circumstance. Next slide is another way that we can look at our family's value with our program. This is a key driver analysis. In this situation, we are looking at a Pearson's correlation coefficient. Ideally, if something's fully correlated, the value is 1.0. We don't achieve anything that high, but what we can look at is particular questions on our survey that satisfaction with that item relates most often with satisfaction with the overall health plan. For instance, easy to get prescriptions. That has been a top contender among our most highly correlated items that correlate the best with overall satisfaction. Even though it's at 0.3, you can see that it's higher than the other elements. Over the years, we see that there's a certain number that always maintain a high correlation or a higher correlation with respect to others. That gives you an idea in our situation, any changes to our pharmacy benefit may affect overall satisfaction with the program. It's good to have this information available. Look at the next slide real quick. I also wanted to mention that I do need to back up for a second. Sorry. Another thing that we do with our data is not just looking at even these correlations at the top box level. We go back and we look at our items using both the top and the second top. So if the values are sometimes, always, and never, and usually, we're looking at always, only, or can we look at always and usually? And sometimes you can see that there's much more satisfaction when you include the usually. And you can see the undercurrents. Are people shifting from always to usually, or are they shifting from usually to always? There's just more than one way of looking at the data, and we kind of recommend getting in there and seeing it both ways and tracking those things over time and seeing if indeed you're seeing what you expect or if you see a trend that you think should be addressed. And looking at why do we think we're doing well? I kind of agree with what Stacia was saying. A lot of it is an artifact of the way the program has been designed and developed. In part, of course, it's about the healthcare, but in other parts, it may be more about the infrastructure. Our program was founded on two principles of being family-friendly and being administratively simple. We have talked about that for years. By being family-friendly, we mean we want to be approachable, easy to communicate with. By doing that, we hear more from our families and we can be more responsive to their needs. We also strive to be administratively simple, trying to reduce barriers to enrollment, trying to reduce other administrative barriers, trying to make our program as open as possible to help these families find health care for their children. Other plan features that we have very low cost sharing. That's always something that satisfies the families. We also have very comprehensive benefits. In fact, we had dental benefits long before it was required of CHIP programs, and our goal has always been to provide the most robust package of benefits possible for our children. Another design feature we have is the private delivery model. This helps remove the Medicaid stigma. So a lot of our families, they don't identify us with Medicaid. The providers don't identify us with Medicaid. Our children have private insurance cards. And so removing that stigma is satisfying for our families. There's also a level of self-perception. Our families have cost sharing. it is low cost sharing comparatively speaking, but these parents do not feel like they're getting a handout. They feel like they're finding a way of having affordable health care. So these families are working families, and they're contributing to their children's health care, and they find a great deal of satisfaction in that as well. So how do we address barriers that we find? Well, the main thing is open communication. We try to keep open communication with our families and with our partners. When it comes to open communication with our families, we have an in-house call center staffed by customer service representatives here locally. We also have a staff of master-level social workers who also receive phone calls, and those get triaged to them as needed. Of course, that keeps our ears wide open for what's going on with our families. Prior to using CAHPS in 2011, we actually had a 10-year suite of surveys that we conducted with the University of Alabama at Birmingham School of Public Health using CAHPS-like surveys. So we're really familiar with a lot of the CAHPS questions already. We used these to do a suite of surveys over 10 years, looking at our new enrollees, looking at children with special health care needs, groups looking at adolescent health, looking at disenrollees. So it's important for us not to just simply use CAHPS officially as one survey, and that's your way of finding out what's going on with your family. We also look at, are there subgroups you need to look at? Can you look at them over time as well? Can you customize these surveys to look at particular questions that you have? We provide feedback opportunities through our applications. We have our online and our paper applications at different times of our history have had surveys attached to them where we could there, you know, more passively get families to provide us with feedback. We've also conducted focus groups on occasion. That's not a regular activity that we have, but when the occasion arises where we need to and there's opportunity for it, we'll do focus groups in different areas of the state, often looking at specific subgroups, say those who disenrolled or those who did not renew or maybe new enrollees. In addition to keeping the direct line with our families open, we keep open communication with our partners as well. And often the partners work closely with families, so they often can pass information to us. We meet monthly with our health plan vendors. We collaborate with many partners statewide, including state agencies, Department of Mental Health, Alabama Medicaid, of course, our children's rehab services. We're also involved in a lot of quality measures, and this kind of gets back to the healthcare piece, but there's many quality alliances associated with our larger hospitals and our universities, and we're always partnering with them as well. So I think most of our partners and our families realize that we are looking out for their interests, trying ways to always improve the care that we provide for them. So where are we going from here? Well, we always look to see what's coming up next. We have not yet done CAHPS for our Medicaid child expansion. This is a group of 6 to 18-year-olds in our state. They run from 100% to 146% FPL. These children would be CHIP funded, but they're administered by the Alabama Medicaid agency. So we haven't really worked out the difference on how we need to assess their consumer assessment. Keeping in mind they're not having care delivered by the same delivery model that we provide through all kids. This will be provided through Medicaid. So we're interested in knowing what their experiences are. We've always tried to do a lot of work with Medicaid looking at the churning issue. So as children transition back and forth between the Medicaid program and our CHIP program, are we able to maintain quality care for them? And what's their experience as they try and shift between the two different modes of delivery? Another thing we're looking forward to is the child hospital CAHPS. That's just now coming together, and so we're looking forward to CMS's guidance on that, and can we use this, and how will we be using this? So what did we learn, and what are our take-home points? Basically, keeping our eyes and ears open to what our families need, if it's through the families directly or if it's even through our collaborations with our partners, if they can relay information to us. So I always recommend that we just keep our eyes and our ears open. In our situation, we use our call centers, very helpful. Deep and broad collaborations with all your partners. assessing consumer experience, not just always doing it, but to do it in various ways. I think that's been a real key for us. We don't rely on one instrument or one time of the year to ask questions. We have multiple modes of families to reach us, different channels for them to come to us and to give us information that we need so we can see our program through their eyes. And that's all I have for you.
Okay, Chris, thank you so much. That was terrific. Really appreciate the fine presentation on what you're doing down in Alabama with your All Kids program. There are a number of questions that have queued up. I'm going to take two right off the top because they're really sort of technical questions that relate to the survey administration. One has to do with the standard regarding number of CAHPS surveys that health plans should attempt to hit in order to get results that are, quote, valid. They're actually, we would refer to that as reliable across different plans in terms of the number of respondents. We have a target of 300 completed surveys at the plan level, which we have shown through experiences adequate for plan-to-plan comparisons. A second question real quickly related to what we've been talking about in terms of the top box scores relates to the most positive response available on a given question. There's a scale, usually never to always, for most of the CAHPS questions, or the ratings are 0 to 10. And when we refer to top box, this has been done by both Stacia and Chris, we're talking about the percentage of respondents that are selecting the most positive response. So, Chris, directly to you now, there are a number of questions. One has to do with how does Alabama ensure high participation among practitioners? Are payment rates comparable to Medicare?
So we contract at this point. We don't have a carve-out here in our state anymore either. At the different times, we have had carve-outs by both area of service or geography. So as it stands today, we use Blue Cross Blue Shield Alabama. That is the largest insurance group in the state. They have the largest provider network. So in our agreement with Blue Cross, if that provider is with Blue Cross and they are accepting new patients, then they can accept, then they must accept All Kids. All Kids is not treated separately from the other plans offered by Blue Cross. So
okay.
that's one way that we address provider network. And that's one of the values we get from working with Blue Cross is that we have, it's the largest provider network in the state.
Okay. And what are the primary ethnic groups that your program serves?
We're basically two-thirds white and one-third black, and then just a smattering of other races and combinations in between.
Can you say a little more, Chris, about the kind of feedback you get at the application level? What do you mean when you refer to that?
Well, it's meant different things at different times. So there were a number of years we asked kind of I'll say almost kind of a health screening question just to get a sense of what kind of conditions do children have as they come into the program. That really wasn't as helpful for us as we kind of imagined in the earlier days, but it is something that we collected for years, in addition to getting more demographics about the family themselves, education level, income level, and things about the family, things that they might need. Those surveys kind of changed over time, though. Now the question was no longer informing us with something, we would tweak it and go a different route.
Okay. So another question has to do with the families with children in Alabama. Do they all have cost-sharing benefits, or are there any exceptions? Is there, for example, a sliding scale?
We have three cost-sharing groups. There's basically what we have a no-fee category, and that's mainly for Native Americans and for those who have exceeded their annual max. That doesn't happen very often. So we have a small number of Native Americans program. They have no cost sharing. Then we have what we would call a low fee and a fee group. Comparatively speaking, they're all rather minimal.
Chris, do you use any questions from the chronic child survey, that supplemental set?
Yeah, that supplement is in our – we use the core set that includes the chronic child supplement.
I see. And do you see any differences in the kind of responses you get from that set versus the core set? They're basically different questions, so really mm-hmm. wouldn't be able to compare differences.
Yeah.
Okay. So
and we don't stratify. and our mm-hmm. We've not asked that feature to be done yet. I mean, not, we know that's possible, but we have not stratified a chronically ill child versus the non chronically ill.
You also, I just wanted, you gave a great example earlier in your presentation about looking underneath the composite scores to individual questions and actually drawing from the supplemental item set, which you were able to do to you know, dig deeper on some of the scores. I thought that was very helpful. So one other question, I think, and I have a couple more then to feel back to you, Stacia, but Chris, would you describe some of the channels that you use to reach consumers?
Well, a number of them. Certainly we used to have the whole health fair presence and working with providers at the local level. That was one method of reaching out to families. Another one has been to use billboards. When it gets to bigger media, we've done a little bit of television. We started using billboards at one point. We have started using and I forget what the exact term for it is, but when you're in a movie theater and before the show starts, that slide deck that pops up, we had a presence there as well. We call that just movie theater. We also had a large sports outreach, so we were affiliated with a marketing that with our football, college level football and basketball, and other college sports, which. But Alabama's a real winner. That's going to be a popular, yeah. That's going to be a popular way of reaching people.
Football is big there. Okay,
and that
great.
Was multi, and that would have been multimedia, both television and radio and the actual presence in the stadium.
Okay. Great. So, Stacia, I want to bring you back in, too. You had talked a little bit about the CGCAP survey and a couple of questions that come in that I wasn't able to field earlier. One has to do with how do you go about conducting those surveys, and how often is the CGCAP survey fielded? Can you address how that fits into your CAPS health plan survey data?
Sure. We don't actually conduct the CGCAP survey. Our provider network does, mm-hmm. And certainly not all providers do it, but certainly all of the large care systems and people who are reporting into Minnesota Community Measurement do CGCAP. It's baked into most pay-for-performance programs between the health plans and providers in the state. So we're pretty consistently using the same measurement methodology.
Mm-hmm.
So the providers actually contract and do that themselves.
And those data, as you mentioned, in terms of the Minnesota environment, are collected and published through Minnesota Health Scores by Minnesota Community Measurement.
That's correct.
This is a question related to the comparability or confidence that we can have in the CAPS data that are collected by the individual organizations themselves. Do you ever have any concerns about the comparability of these results across health plans since you're all kind of using your own vendors?
For our Medicaid contracts, I do not, because it's actually conducted by the state of Minnesota.
Right. And so that is something that's kind of a nuance in this state, but yes, go ahead.
Well, we also conduct our own CAPS survey annually because we do that for our NCQA accreditation, and then we're able to compare the state results
mm-hmm.
to ours, because one would assume that with the population size as large as ours, we're not hitting up the same people, and we should be seeing comparable results. And we have seen consistency between the state-gathered results and our own survey vendor.
Great. That's good to know. Here's a question for both of you. Chris, we'll start with you. The question has to do with best practices that you might be able to relate in terms of achieving your high scores on members' experience with customer service. I mean, do you have some examples on how health plans can go about pushing those scores up?
This is Stacia. I'd be glad to speak to that.
Go ahead.
We have quality measures for our customer service reps that are actually measured on a monthly basis, and it's part of their corporate incentive plan, so they have to meet certain targets to be eligible for their pay incentives. In addition, we do random surveys that are conducted. It's a 6-question survey. The member has to obviously volunteer to participate in it, but it's offered randomly after after interactions with our customer service team,
but
frequently enough that we have a large enough body of data to get to be able to score it at an individual customer service representative level.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here's a question for either of you, Chris or Stacia. All health plans use a survey of vendor of some kind. How active is your vendor in actually assisting you in achieving improvements in your scores? Chris?
Well, our vendor has, is willing to go deeper if we need to. They've always helped us kind of, again, look deeper into the data. That was really, when we first got into CAHPS, officially, the data was in a format we didn't really understand, and it wasn't quite the way we had done it when we did our 10 years prior using CAHPS-like questions. So the vendor was instrumental in helping us analyze the data and digging a little deeper, and it's with them that we were identifying different supplements if we wanted to add them to dig deeper, as well as looking between top box and top two box.
So they've been an active partner. Stacia, could you say the same for your vendor?
The state's vendor does not interact with the health plan.
But you, on your side, do have your own vendor.
We do have our own vendor, and, years ago, they certainly did, much like Chris said, some education about how we read that, but we actually have our own research team here at Blue Cross, so they do the data crunching for us.
Okay. We got to many questions, not all of them. I really appreciate all of the questions that were sent to us, and apologize for not getting to all of them. We only have a few minutes left, and I just want to move on then into the closing segment of our webcast today. We've talked a lot about the CAHPS database as a source of data. This is a screenshot that shows the URL address of the CAHPS database online reporting system. Currently, we have comparison data for 2014 that relates to the adult and child Medicaid populations, the CHIP data that have been submitted. We also have data from Medicare managed care enrollees, so that can be viewed in a variety of ways, by tables and bar charts and percentiles, and users can build their own reports. We also, for those who don't like to use online systems for looking at results, we put together a chart book that kind of summarizes key findings, and we make that available every year as well. With respect to our time frame, this year our schedule for receiving health plan submissions to add to the database and thereby do comparisons will begin in June 1, and we have a two-week period ending June 12th, and then we report results generally in October of that same year, October of 2015 this year. Also want to mention that we're right in the middle of our clinician and group database submission period. It will end on the 27th of March. And we'll be reporting results on our CGCAP survey data in the early part of June. So this image is one of our submission site, which has its own URL. You can get to this site if you look on the left. If you're anywhere in the CAHPS database site, there's a legend on the left that allows you to go wherever you need to, whether you want to look at comparative data or go to the submission site. That's what the red circle is highlighting, how you get to the health plan submission page. Now, finally, I just want to make sure everyone knows that if you're interested in receiving email updates, which we send out on a periodic basis regarding CAHPS information and upcoming events, you can be on the listserv for these emails by going to the CAHPS site shown here. There's a little icon up on the upper right, which gets you to the AHRQ website, where you can select email updates, and that allows you to enroll to get periodic email updates. And so you will learn about these kinds of events as they are scheduled throughout the year, and you'll receive email messages regarding both the health plan as well as the CGCAHPS survey databases. So we have reached the top of the hour. I want to thank Chris and Stacia for your contributions, your very, very helpful, informative presentations today. I want to thank all of our participants for attending and for the questions that came in. And I want to ask each of you to complete an evaluation survey when We end the webcast in just a few seconds. You will get a pop-up in another window. Please complete the survey. It helps us a lot. And click on Submit the Survey when you're done. And just so you know, you can contact us at any time through our email or our phone addresses and visit us on our website as indicated here. So again, thanks to Chris. Thanks to Stacia. Thank you all. And have a great St. Paddy's Day.